Welcome to The Edge. I'm your host and producer, Tom Smith. Today in our program, we have a very special guest. We have Rex Curry.
Thanks, Tom.
Who is a lifelong resident of Hillsborough County, and his family has been in Florida for six generations. In fact, the Curry family was one of the original settlers of Key West and established the Curry Mansion there. Rex is a libertarian and a lawyer, too, actively litigating the Pledge of Allegiance case before the U.S. Supreme Court. And this case is called Wanchick versus the U.S. And what we're going to talk about today mainly is this very interesting background, this very horrifying, dark background of the Pledge of Allegiance, which the vast majority of Americans are not aware of. When I was a elementary school student, it was obligatory in our school that every morning you had to say the Pledge of Allegiance as a group. And if you didn't, you were sent out of class and sent to the principal's office, and God help you, what would happen there? But this has come up in recent years, the whole Pledge of Allegiance. This is something which had nothing to do with the founding of our country. It didn't come into existence till, what was it, the early 20th century?
1892 was the Pledge of Allegiance was written by Francis Bellamy.
Francis Bellamy. Now, the Bellamy name is familiar.
That's right, Tom. His cousin and cohort was Edward Bellamy, and he wrote the book Looking Backward, 2000 to 1888. It was a futuristic sci-fi book that basically painted up his totalitarian socialism in a utopian form. It was about a man who fell asleep in the year 1888 and woke up in the year 2000, and you have a socialistic monopoly government at that point. They control jobs, they give you ration cards, all of your food products come from the government, and you are, by law, not allowed to have anything more than anyone else can have. Everything's controlled by the government, and the schools are in this book are specifically used as part of this is their term, industrial army. They use the term industrial army. The schools are used to create the industrial army of socialism, and believe it or not, this was described as a utopia by Edward Bellamy in his book, Looking Backward.
So this was kind of a mixture of Rip Van Winkle in 1984.
Exactly. It's terrifying when you look back at it, especially the use of the term industrial army, because it was written in 1888, and it became an international bestseller. It was translated into 20 different languages, including Russian, German, and even Chinese. And Bellamy became famous and traveled a lot promoting his ideas, Edward especially, Francis more so in the United States. And so you can actually see how he influenced the industrial armies and the atrocities, millions of people slaughtered and killed by famines and by outright murder in the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, the People's Republic of China, and the National Socialist German Workers' Party.
So this book, did it influence Stalin and Lenin?
He sure did. In fact, they know that it was read by Lenin's wife because she actually wrote a review of it. There's also another book you can look at. It's called Bellamy Abroad, Edward Bellamy Abroad by Bowman, B-O-W-M-A-N. And she actually describes by country the effect that Edward Bellamy had influencing politics in all the countries, including Germany and Russia, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, as it became in 1917.
So Francis Bellamy wrote this pledge in 1892.
Yes.
And at that time, what did the pledge entail?
Well, that's the other terrifying thing about it, that your local papers, including our own horrible local papers, the Times and the Tribune, will not tell you about. They won't show you an actual photograph of it, although that recently changed with the Times, which was a straight-arm salute. Our Pledge of Allegiance to the U.S. flag was the origin of the straight-arm salute of the National Socialist German Workers' Party. And it was that way, not only from 1892, as it was originally written by Francis Bellamy. It persisted in that format at least until 1942, when the U.S. Congress first officially recognized the pledge and tried to stipulate that it should be done with the modern hand over the heart. People do not realize that that is the origin of the salute of the National Socialist German Workers Party. In fact, I am working on even more research to suggest that the main reason the U.S. Congress officially recognized the pledge in 1942 was to ditch the straight-arm salute, because obviously we were at war, and it was becoming increasingly embarrassing, the fact that our pledge was written by a national socialist, a man who was a self-proclaimed socialist in the nationalism movement, with a magazine called The Nationalists and clubs called Nationalist Clubs back in 1892 and before that. And eventually we had the Germany influence to the National Socialist German Workers' Party, also adopting a lot of the policies espoused by Edward Bellamy and lurking backward, including the government running all the schools.
So this Hitler salute really had its origins in the original Pledge of Allegiance Edward Bellamy.
Right, and even the concepts of National Socialism were promoted by Edward Bellamy. A lot of people don't realize that the word Nazi is a shorthand for National Socialist German Workers' Party. Yeah. It's really, if you pronounce the word national as it is in German, it's
Nationalsozialist.
Exactly. Yeah. And people don't know that. And the reason you don't know that is because if you go to, say, any newspaper website, including our local ones, and you look at their archives and you type in National Socialist German Workers' Party, you're going to be lucky if you find any use ever of the actual name of that party. They never use it, or rarely, and they constantly use the hackneyed phrase Nazi. And there's two reasons for that. One, sometimes it's deliberate because they're trying to rehabilitate socialism. Two, they're as ignorant as everybody else is. They've been doing it for so long, they do not know that the Nazis were, in fact, the National Socialist German Workers' Party.
Do you have a website with photographs of this on it?
I sure do. People find this absolutely amazing. RexCurry.net. It's RexCurry, all together, .net. And when you get there, you'll see links on the front page to other pages that have multiple examples of historic photographs, which, by the way, are very difficult to acquire. It took me some time to find them. But I had seen one a long time ago when I was much younger. And so when the recent Pledge of Allegiance litigation came up, I kept waiting to see somebody say something about the National Socialist German Workers Party and the Francis Bellamy, the National Socialist, and the Straight Arm Salute. Never happens all the while this litigation is going on. And so finally I took it upon myself to find these old photographs, start posting them, and to this day, I'm the only place on the internet that collects and displays them, and most of the photos, if you can find any other examples, came from my site, including the one time that I know of that the St. Pete Times actually ran in one of the photographs. It was because Robin Blumler called me up on the phone and asked me to give her one of the photographs.
And she's a columnist for the St. Pete Times.
That's
who's
right,
is she an attorney with the ACLU?
Yes, she sure is. And, you know, I enjoy a lot of her writing, but I will tell you, I was really disappointed when I spoke to her, because I not only explained all the things I'm explaining to you, I actually said, when you write the article, you should say National Socialist German Workers' Party, because the whole point is you're writing this article to show this bizarre salute that originated with the Pledge of Allegiance to the U.S. flag. And don't just do what everybody else does, which is one of my pet peeves with the media, the lamestream media, the hackneyed use of the abbreviation instead of saying the actual name of the party.
Yeah.
Explain all this to her. And on the column she did where she printed that photograph that I had supplied to her, she does not state National Socialist German Workers' Party. Uses the hackneyed abbreviation. Very irritating. Yeah. They still do it. I mean, they'll do it after right after you tell it to their face. They'll still do it. So
out of a habit, maybe.
And as far as I know, yeah. I am not aware that the Tribune to this day has ever printed one of the historic photographs.
And these are actually school children with their arms in a Hitler salute towards the flag.
Right. Now, I do want to, for the sake of your listeners' understanding, there's some things that are even worse about it. The way Francis Bellamy described the original salute, it actually started with a military salute. And this, again, ties into their phrase, industrial army, in the book Looking Backward. It was a military salute. I pledge allegiance with a military salute. Mm-hmm. And then to the flag, they would gesture to the flag. The way Francis Bellamy described, that would be the straight-arm salute to the flag. And the rest of the pledge was with the straight-arm salute to the flag. And you can, on my website, rexcurry.net, I also have examples of the military salute posture, which was quickly dropped. Those are very rare. Seems like people just started doing the straight arm thing, which makes sense because, you know, the kids were not in the Army, and some people would even consider it disrespectful to have kids, you know, pretending to be military soldiers. They might have, hopefully they even found it disturbing at the time, 1892. But also, I'll tell you that the way he originally described it, the palm was supposed to be up, not straight out, as you often see the Nazi soldiers. Mm. However, when you look at the photos, including the photos that I have on my website, you see, once again, that everybody got into the habit of just doing the straight arm salute. And, you know, when you're trying to tell these poor little minds full of mush how to do it, they just stick their arms out, and they all start doing the Hitler salute. I'll also tell you that when the Congress changed, tried to recognize a pledge for the first time in 1942 with the Hanover Heart, that didn't change a lot for a lot of people. Back then, the states didn't immediately bend over every time Congress said bend over, right? Mm-hmm. So there was. I've heard from people who write to me, and I put a lot of their comments on my website under a fan page, fan mail page that I have about the pledge, mm-hmm. who were doing it in the 60s. They were still doing the straight arm salute. And another thing that I think you mentioned earlier is there was a Supreme Court case that originally said you could be expelled from school for not saying the pledge. However, 3 years later, the Supreme Court reversed itself and said that you could not be expelled because of the pledge. That was in 1943. It started the first case, 1941, and then 1943, they reversed themselves. Nevertheless, we all know that the reality was a lot of schools, a lot of places would still punish or expel or take action against kids who weren't going to pledge.
There'd be punishment.
And even if that wasn't the case, there would be peer pressure from other students and things like that.
You know, this is very, very interesting because the same schools, I'll speak for the ones that I attended, the same schools that ran this Nazi-type Pledge of Allegiance down our throats are the same ones that refuse, at least covertly, to teach the U.S. Constitution, which is teaching us about not only the history of our nation, but also the fact that this document recognizes human rights.
That's a very good point, Tom. In fact, it ties in exactly to what Francis Bellamy and Edward Bellamy were trying to achieve. They were self-proclaimed socialists. They didn't like the U.S. Constitution. They were anti-capitalistic. They disliked private property rights. They disliked the free market economics. They would like to have had their pledge become what it has become, and as you said, stop teaching the U.S. Constitution.
So the U.S. they were opposed to everything, basically, or at least most things, what the U.S. Constitution is there to protect and defend.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They, in fact, you could say they have achieved so many of the things that they wanted to achieve. They were trying to, and the original article in 1892 was in the U.S. Companion, September of 1892. You can read the whole, it's not just this, oh, here's a pledge thing. Mm-hmm. It was a whole program, and he writes an article, which, by the way, Bellamy's article, The Meaning of the Four Centuries, is only on the internet at my website, along with so much stuff we couldn't even possibly talk about it in an entire day. So many articles about so many bizarre aspects of this horrifying story. And they were trying to get the government to take over the schools. They succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they succeeded in doing what you've indicated, de-emphasizing constitutional rights, private property rights, free market economics. Mm-hmm. And the really bizarre thing is usually some of the people who yell the loudest about the pledge today are Republicans, conservatives, people considered to be right-wingers, mm-hmm. which is almost hilarious now because you know when you see it happen, they are complete ignoramuses about the origin of the pledge, mm-hmm. what it meant, what its author was trying to achieve. They have completely embraced socialized schools now, which is one of his desires, which they don't even talk about anymore. And they boastfully do the socialist pledge, paying homage to Francis Bellamy and his socialism. Absolutely. It's almost hilarious now when you see them. And you know they don't know what they're doing. They know nothing about it. And then sometimes I hear from them because they see my website and they read my articles, and some of them are absolutely shocked and amazed. First disbelief, and then they read more and more about it, and then people write to me and say, I'm never going to do the pledge again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you really have to go to Rex's website. It's rexcurry.net.
That's correct.
And it's rexcurry.net. And actually take a look at those photographs that are there and read the articles. And this will, I mean, don't take our word for it here over the radio. Actually take a look at it for yourself. And this is all documentable. I mean, they could, if they wanted to investigate this, they could actually document it.
Sure, sure. Yeah. And I can tell you about other books that have been written about Bellamy. I mentioned Bauman's book, Bellamy Abroad, which really tells you a lot about his influence. I call him the American Marx.
Yeah.
I mean, he arguably had a greater influence than Marx. People talk about Marx all the time, but let's face it, even people who supported Marxist ideas, when they got into practice, Marxism wasn't happening. It was this bizarre utopian thing about, you know, the workers having this revolution. Mm-hmm. Never happened. Well, in practice, what would happen is they would have the government impose socialism, and it was like Edward Bellamy's form of socialism. And, of course, you can see the even more frightening, ominous parallels with the National Socialist German Workers' Party. That term, the industrial army, used in government schools to create the industrial army, sticking the kids in their little rows, making them stand up, making them do the salute, making them do the salutes, making them worship the government,
mm-hmm.
which is what Francis Bellamy was doing.
And definitely in Second World War in Nazi Germany, National Socialist German Workers' Party Germany, that's what was going on. That was obligatory. And if you didn't Heil Hitler, you were questioned by the secret state police, the Gestapo, or very minimally ostracized by the supporters of the Nazi regime.
And I want to tie that into something else, too, as well as the Supreme Court case, which on Monday is going to be in conference, interestingly enough. The timing of this show is just wonderful, Tom. On Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court justices will be having their conference about the case that we're presently litigating.
And that's the Wanchick versus the U.S.
Right.
Okay.
And you mentioned the earlier case, the National Socialist German Workers' Party. Let me tell you something terrifying about the circumstances in the U.S., Jehovah's Witnesses would not pledge to Hitler or do the Heil Hitler. Same reasoning. It was like worshiping government.
And they were put in concentration camps.
Right, and killed even.
Yeah.
And they were hoping for a different result here. The original case, Gobitis, in 1941, took a while to get to the U.S. Supreme Court. They were litigating the same thing. The idea it was a graven image, it was a worship of government, and they were hoping for a better result than they got in the National Socialist German Workers' Party. Well, unfortunately, they didn't. The original case, Gobitis, G-O-B-I-T-I-S, said they can expel you. The U.S. Supreme Court said you can be expelled from government schools if you don't do the pledge. And if that wasn't amazing enough, at that time, they were doing it with the straight arm salute. We were at war with the National Socialist German Workers' Party doing the same freaking salute, and the U.S. Supreme Court was telling the Jehovah's Witnesses, you're going to do the salute, you know.
Incredible. So, we're going to get more back into this. We got to take a PSA break here, So we'll be back with Tampa attorney Rex Curry after these announcements.
Will it be hot tomorrow? Tune into Hawk Radio's weather with Roy Lunsford every morning, 8 to 10 a.m. for live weather updates you can trust.
Hawk Radio weather.
Two, three.
Dennis plays the kind of music that I like. He just shouldn't sing along with it.
Oh, yeah. I do that so other people don't get it. You know? It's the only karaoke station in town. You know? Nobody else does it. And when I tell you to do that, I always tell you to keep two hands on the wheel, you know, because, like, if you start clapping and singing along with the songs I play, man, you're going to wind up in a ditch somewhere.
He can play whatever he wants. He can sing. He doesn't have to promise not to.
All right.
Listen to Hail Hawk Rock and Roll. Sing and dance at your own risk.
What's up, Tampa Bay? This is your boy Slick Worthington, host of the Hip Hawk Hour here on Hawk Radio 1520 AM. We're also live on the net at www.hawkradio.com. Tune in every Tuesday, 11 to noon, for the illest hour in hip hop. We support local and unsigned artists, so contact me at slickworthy813@yahoo.com to schedule an appearance or simply to have your music played on air.
A Second Look is a program designed to explain community and world events. We try to put complicated events into simple, everyday terminology. The Middle East is a mess. Iraq is Iraq.
Join Professor Greco and Dennis Welch as they analyze the news and other media issues. Listen to The Second Look Monday through Thursday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. Fridays, The Second Look recaps the week events at 10 a.m. Complex news made simple, it's The Second Look, only on Hawk Radio.
We're back. This is The Edge, and I'm your host, Tom Smith. We're back with Rex Curry, who is a lifelong resident of Hillsborough County. His family has been in Florida for six generations. They were one of the original settlers of Key West. You've probably heard of the Curry Mansion. That was one of his ancestors there. Rex is a libertarian and a defense lawyer, too. He's currently actively litigating a Pledge of Allegiance case before the U.S. Supreme Court. This case is called Wanchick versus the U.S. And we're going to talk more about this. Rex, what do you care to discuss about this case?
Well, I tell you, Tom, you can also tell your listeners that the legal briefs are available on my website, rexcurry.net. Mm-hmm. The Wanchick is W-O-N-S-C-H-I-K. You'll see it on the front page if you look for it, and all the other stuff about the pledge. Mm-hmm. And so you can actually see the legal briefs. There's also something funny about it, which ties into what we've been discussing. There's been a motion to recuse that I wrote discussing the fact that so many of these our United States Supreme Court justices are older people. Some of them, we know, must have been, if they went to government school, they were doing it under compulsion of law. Mm-hmm. And they were doing the straight arm salute. They were also attending racist segregated government schools imposed by law, mm-hmm. which lasted arguably through the 60s, even the 70s, before the Supreme Court had to deal with that issue. So it's fascinating to me, to, in my motion to recuse, to look at the ages and the upbringing of the United States Supreme Court justices and how it all tied into where they were at during all these horrible things that happened due to the Bellamy's and the Pledge of Allegiance.
This case basically it centers on what's the basis for this case here?
Oh, this case has to do with a jury. It's arguing that making a jury in a criminal trial, especially a federal criminal trial, pledge allegiance before trial prejudices the defendant, gives him doesn't give him a fair trial.
Mm-hmm.
And so Wanchuk was being prosecuted on a homemade machine gun charge.
Mm-hmm.
The judge, shortly after 9/11, decided he was going to lead the jury in a Pledge of Allegiance before Wanchuk's trial. And remember, the Pledge of Allegiance is, in addition to all the things we've discussed, it's a pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Mm-hmm. And especially in a federal criminal case, that's the name at the top of the indictment, the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like having the jury pledge allegiance to the prosecutor or to the government right when you're about to get tried by them, and they're asking the jury to throw you in jail.
Now, what would have happened if a juror would have said, I refuse to do this. This is nonsense.
Exactly. That is a perfect question. And it would also have to do with when they were asked to do it. That could be a problem. Obviously, if they did that before jury selection, and right offhand, I can't remember the exact point that occurred in the case, it's very possible the prosecutor would throw them off the case because they haven't been socialized enough. They aren't interested in pledging allegiance to the United States of America, the prosecutor's side of the case. There's so many things that could happen. Suppose you got a Jehovah's Witness as an attorney. What's he going to do? He's either going to lie and do the pledge, which they don't even want to do it now with under God in the pledge, and I don't blame them.
Mm-hmm.
And back in 1892, under God wasn't even in the pledge, and they didn't want to do it because it was still the worship of government.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had an attorney say that didn't want to do it or was a Jehovah's Witness, what's he going to do? Is he going to risk prejudicing your case against you because he's going to sit while everybody else is doing the pledge? Or the defendant doesn't want to do it, and then the jury hates the defendant? You know, there's so many things that come up as issues when you start trying to have pledges for juries in courtrooms.
Mm-hmm. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, back when one of the legacies of the Pledge of Allegiance was racism and segregation in schools, back in 1892, the government hadn't taken over schools the way they had now.
Mm-hmm.
Most people got their education still from private schools. When Bellamy and his cohort succeeded in having government take over schools, we know what we ended up with. We ended up with government imposing racism and segregation and teaching it as official policy for decades, all the way into the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, you cannot measure the impact that had on damaging our society, the government imposing this by law.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that is a legacy of the Pledge of Allegiance, of the Bellamy's, and of our government's takeover of the school system. And a funny thing happened also. Jesse Owens, a lot of people remember the historic event of Jesse Owens in the Olympics mm-hmm. in Munich mm-hmm. in Germany.
It was 1938?
I think so.
Yeah.
And it was a big show for Hitler, and it was such a great showing for Jesse Owens. And yet people do not recall that at that time, Jesse Owens' family and friends would have been in the United States performing the Pledge of Allegiance with a straight-arm salute in a racist, segregated government school system. Fascinating parallel when you think about it. And Jesse's over there showing that he's as good or better than the National Socialist German Workers' Party. And we're over here doing a pledges written by a National Socialist with a straight-arm salute and racist, segregated government schools. So it's when you start to think about all the crazy stuff that was going on back then, it's a wonder why we didn't end up with 62 million killed like they did in the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, 35 million killed in the People's Republic of China, and 21 million killed under the National Socialist German Workers' Party. which, by the way, people seem to forget that World War II involved the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics and the National Socialist German Workers' Party in a pact to divide up East Europe when they started in 1939 invading Poland.
Yeah.
So
that was, yeah, it was specifically that territory today known as Poland. And they did work together. In fact, I don't know if you know this, they worked together quite a bit in Germany. They had a coalition that lasted into, I'm going to say, around 1930. And this coalition, they were trying to get rid of the Weimar government. That was their, I mean, I can tell you this, because I know what happened there. And the Nazis were the prevailing party in that conflict, and they got rid of the communists. The communists ended up having to flee. But they worked together up until almost literally the last minute. Yeah. So it was a very curious arrangement.
If you go to my website, rexcurry.net, you'll also be able to actually see one example I have been able to find of a segregated class of students doing the straight arm salute to the flag. It's really terrifying to look at.
And this is at this site, rexcurry.net, rexcurry.net.
And when you tie that in with the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics and the National Socialist German Workers' Party, you don't want to minimize the impact of what the Bellamys did, Francis Bellamy and Edward Bellamy, because it's not just that these horrible socialists worldwide were outright murdering people. Their philosophy of socialism as a way to operate an economy was killing people mm-hmm. by the millions. Yes. I'm talking about famines, mm-hmm. and especially in the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, which lasted longer than the National Socialist German Workers' Party. They killed 62 million people, and a lot of that was because they followed the philosophical, political, economic ideas of people like Edward Bellamy. They destroyed their farms, destroyed their food distribution system, they destroyed the supply and demand of a free market economy, and 62 million people died because of them.
And they murdered the managers, the people running companies there, or drove them out.
Yeah, and I call it the industrial army of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. Same thing happened in China. Massive famines, massive deaths. And, of course, in China, in some ways, they had even more bizarre schooling, brainwashing techniques, yeah. Which ties right into the whole concept that Francis Bellamy was promoting. Government takeover school. Government's going to make you part of the industrial army, tell you the way it's going to be, tell you to embrace the socialistic philosophy. And that's what happened in the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics and the People's Republic of China, which both, a lot of people don't realize, killed many more people than did the National Socialist German Workers' Party. I call them the Socialist Trio of Atrocities. People don't realize, number one, they don't even, all they ever hear is the word Nazi. When I talk to you, you're going to probably notice that I say National Socialist German Workers' Party an awful lot. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes do that without ever saying the abbreviation. Mm-hmm. And I do it deliberately because people have forgotten what the abbreviation stood for.
You're doing it to educate people.
Right. And so I call them the Socialist Trio of Atrocity. It is the greatest mass slaughter of humanity that has ever occurred on the earth. And it occurred on the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, 62 million, People's Republic of China, 35 million, National Socialist German Workers' Party, 21 million.
One curious thing here, this kind of ties into this issue of what's euphemistically referred to as gun control. All these socialistic countries had gun control laws, which disarmed the average citizen, the average person, so that they were defenseless against military police-type organizations seizing property, forcing them into conscripted labor which is another name for slave labor, forcing them to do certain things. And this was a way that they could impose their socialistic laws and policies on these people. And this kind of ties in with your case here. This fellow evidently was aware of the U.S. Constitution, was aware of the limits of jurisdiction of federal law, and said, you know, I'd like to build a machine gun. And, you know, what the heck, you know? And this guy just, let me ask you this. This guy is not a criminal. I mean, he's not a felon who's out trying to rob a bank or anything like that.
No, not at all. Okay. He was in his own home at the time.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny you mentioned that. I tie it in my motion to recuse and in my brief at my website, which you can read. I had a lot of fun doing it, too, because I tie it in to not only the mob violence that occurred after the U.S. the United States Supreme Court's case in Gobitas, which technically their name was Gobitas, G-O-B-I-T-A-S, the clerk misspelled it. People were attacked because the Supreme Court said originally that they could be expelled, and basically the people read that as essentially saying these people are unpatriotic, they're not Americans, and it was taken as a license by people to literally cause physical harm to Jehovah's Witnesses and other people who did not want to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Mm-hmm.
One of the good aspects is that they removed their children from government schools,
yeah.
And people still do that today. But I also tie it into millions and millions of people were killed by socialists and socialism. And I have shirts that you can also see on my site. The more I read about what the socialists did following Francis Bellamy and Edward Bellamy, it inspired phrases like more government means you need more guns. And the more I learn about government, the more I like my guns. And the Wancha case actually involved a fellow who was prosecuted on the charge of a homemade machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think it was a symbol at the time, but you can actually get charges for having parts that the government thinks could be used to create a machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an interesting Ninth Circuit case that says it's not the federal government's business to be involved with homemade machine guns under the Commerce Clause.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only do I tie that into the pledge case, I said essentially the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, people need machine guns because mm-hmm. socialists kill people by the millions.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but even in your own case of Go Beat Us, there was mob violence that was inspired by the Pledge of Allegiance. And here we have a case where a jury is being led in the Pledge of Allegiance in a U.S. federal court where this guy is the defendant in a criminal case. Now, we sit here and we wonder what would happen if he didn't do the pledge and whether the jury would hold that against him and convict him. Under the Gobitas case, we could actually wonder whether he was going to get his butt kicked after trial or whether he was going to be mob attacked by people because he didn't say the pledge. That happened, folks. It happened after the Gobitas case, and that's why 3 years later, one of the fastest self-reversals that ever occurred, the United States Supreme Court in Barnett reversed the Gobitas case, because including the reason that there was mob violence inspired by their prior decision. So
this is really a very horrifying, dark period. Well, I guess we're still going through it.
Yeah, that reminds me of another T-shirt I have. My socialist slave number is 262006302. You should wear that whenever you say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Well, I don't think I'm going to be saying the Pledge of Allegiance again. This is and actually, folks, if you want to see these images, if you have internet access, you can go to rexcurry.net, rexcurry.net. And take a look at these photos for yourself. If you want to follow up on this, say, well, you know, I don't believe this. This sounds so incredible. This is unbelievable. Well, we're not asking you to believe it. We're asking you to take a look. Verify it for yourself, because these are based on historical records that you can dig up and look at it for yourself.
I'll tell you something else that's fun. Oh, by the way, before I go off on another issue of the Pledge of Allegiance, you mentioned I'm a libertarian. I don't want your listeners to miss the chances coming up this week. Not only is the Wancha case going to be in conference at the U.S. Supreme Court on Monday, September 27th, but the libertarian candidate for president, Michael Bednarik, is going to be in town on Friday, and he'll be at the Hyatt downtown in Tampa around 6, I believe. And you can also contact me through my website, rexcurry.net, if you need more details on that. Also, he'll be at 29th and 29th with one of the local candidates, Bob Johnson, Kim Snow, and Jim Clifford, running as Libertarians and locally. Michael Badnarik will be there. And on Thursday, tomorrow, Logan's Steakhouse on Anderson, there's going to be a gathering of the local Libertarian candidates without the presidential candidate, and that's at 6:30. Feel free to pop in. I'll be there, too. You can come see me.
So this is the Tampa, downtown Tampa Hyatt, and that's it off of Kennedy?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Kennedy, close to the Tampa Bay, you know, the kind of the western.
Franklin Street, I think it touches Franklin Street.
Too. Okay.
Yeah, right downtown.
Oh, okay.
Brick area. And so that, you're right, it's a terrifying time back in our history. And check out the pictures. I'm always interested in finding more. If anybody out there knows where I can find some more photographs, send them in. I even have some movies that I haven't put onto the site yet. I haven't gotten around to doing that I've located. And do send them in. I actually will pay for them also. Good pics of the historic Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay.
You can also check out my T-shirts. I have a Cafe Press site and an eBay site that's linked on my front page of rexcurry.net. You know, what's funny about Francis Bellamy, the poor fellow, he died in 1931, just as the National Socialist German Workers Party had been around since about 1920. They, I think, had succeeded in elections in 1930. They achieved dictatorship in 1933. Francis Bellamy is living in Tampa when he dies, the last part of his life. It's over. It's not, I've actually been by it. It's down off of Bayshore.
How do you know where it is?
It's marked. It actually is marked with a historic marker. People still eulogize this guy, you know, because they don't know the story. They are complete ignoramuses about Francis Bellamy. That we have a Francis Bellamy school, you know, that's named after him and has flag motifs.
In Tampa?
Yeah, right here in Tampa. But he died in Tampa. He lived the last part of his life in Tampa. And I'm trying to remember the name of the street. Well, you can find it on my website. And if you want to know, just contact me through that. You can also email me, too. It's a really easy email. It's just like my website. It's rex@rexcurry.net, right? So that's an easy way to do it. So anyway, 1931, I don't know whether his mind was, I think he was still up and about, mentally aware, right? So I'm thinking to myself, what is this guy thinking? He's watched the National Socialist German Workers' Party since 1920. They haven't actually achieved dictatorship. They're using a salute similar to his, the straight-arm salute.
Yeah.
That, in fact, everybody was doing it that way in the U.S. And they call themselves National Socialists, just like he used to. And I'm thinking, does he admire it? You know, back then there was a lot of people who didn't have a problem with the National Socialist German Workers'
Henry
Party.
Ford.
Right. And a lot of people.
Yeah.
And and I'll tell you one other funny thing about it. When he wrote his original article in 1892 in the U.S. Companion, he actually he wanted people to take pictures, photographs of them doing his salute, you know, his Pledge of Allegiance, right? And so I'm thinking, man, he must have had a trunk load, a big old box full of this stuff, people mailing them all over the country, and that probably kept up for years, you know?
Yeah.
And then, isn't it just so sad, just about 1931, just when he's about to croak, all those pictures are starting to look weird, man.
Yeah.
They're starting to look creepy. And are starting to get turned off. And now I'm wondering, where's the box of all the photos?
Yeah, is there a Francis Bellamy archive or something? Did he?
You know, did he burn them all? What happened to all those pictures? Because they're hard to find now, you know. And that was probably the high point of his life. He probably cherished those photos all the way up until, I don't know whether he saw it coming in 1931 when he was dying, whether he said, oh, man, this sucks.
Maybe the family, if they inherited them, maybe they, when Hitler came to power, they disposed of them or something, you know?
It's very possible. It would not be surprising. I would like to know. But now it's like nobody wants to show it. Your local paper, the Tribune, won't show you a picture.
Anybody out there, any of our listeners who have knowledge about what happened to Francis Bellamy's personal property and his estate, where it went, let Rex know. Go, you know, email him. Go to the website there, rex@rexcurry.net. Email him. That would be, even if you have some, you've heard some, got some hearsay or something, it's all, could be a valuable lead. We'd like to get more of that material.
Yeah, and his cousin, Edward Bellamy, died a lot earlier. I don't think Edward made it into the 1900s, so he missed a lot. In fact, he missed a lot of the slaughter of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. However, Francis would have been probably aware at that point of mass slaughter in the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics.
Yeah, I think Stalin's purges, actually 31, that was around pretty close to the time of Stalin's purges. They might have been a little bit later, but that was right, that might have been just before that time. Mm. But it was...
And the mass famines that were occurring from collectivization of the farms.
Yeah, those were in full swing in the 20s in Russia.
And the industrial army was killing millions in the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, thanks in part to our own socialists in the U.S. and their best-selling, international best-selling book, Looking Backward.
Looking Backward, and that was by Edward Bellamy?
Yeah, I'll tell you another way that Bellamy was more attractive to people than Marx. You know, Marx was dry. He was, how you might say, scholarly. He was turgid. Mm-hmm. He was economics-based. You know, mm-hmm. It was just horrible crap to read, right?
Yeah.
But Edward Bellamy, his book, Looking Backwards, is just this fanciful, utopian, everything's going to be wonderful when we have the industrial army and the government gives you free everything. It's just going to be great. You know, now that is what people wanted to hear. It's complete bullshit, but that's what they wanted to hear. It just sounded wonderful.
Yeah, so it was just basically, he was kind of like the PR, Marx's PR man.
Right, exactly. Even though he actually would say that he disagreed with Marx, he did not refer to himself as a Marxist. And in fact, he tried to present his book as a alternative to Marxism. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, it had the same effect. In fact, in practice, that's what all the Marxists were doing. They were imposing Bellamy-like procedures, social security scams, socialist slave numbers, mm-hmm. numbering people, taking over the schools, regimenting everyone. You know, that's what they were doing. They were doing Bellamy stuff.
So, in this case here, this Wanchick versus the U.S., this gentleman, Mr. Wanchick, made a... And actually, there are books you can buy about making firearms, including fully automatic firearms. They could be made actually very easily. You can make them in your garage in the space of a couple of days with parts that you can get in a hardware store.
Yeah, and don't miss the point, aside from mob violence that's inspired by cases like the Gobitas case, you know, the biggest killer that there's ever been has been government and government officials. That's the whole point of my shirts.
Yeah.
Part of it, more government means you need more guns, and the more I learn about government, the more I like my gun. I mean, we're talking millions of people.
Yeah.
And so how are you going to deal with the crazy people like Stalin mm-hmm. and the National Socialist German Workers' Party and Mao and the crazy People's Republic? How are you going to deal with those people other than... You'll be doing good if you can help yourself with a machine gun, mm-hmm. much less anything else you're going to need to avoid mass slaughter and atrocities from people who think like that.
Yeah.
And how is this country doing? You know, Leonard Peikoff, the Objectivist, wrote a book called The Ominous Parallels. That was back in 1982, where he was discussing the parallels between the United States of America and the National Socialist German Workers' Party. And now we're living with the Department of Homeland Security.
Patriot Act.
We got proposals for national ID cards using your socialist slave number that you've been that they give to infants when they're in the hospitals now to track them from cradle to grave and steal from them for their entire lives. Yeah, it's a scary book to read, and even scarier when you think about the Bellamys and what they did in other countries already. So maybe we're just slow getting there.
You think educating Americans about the Constitution, in other words, getting them to actually take a look and read this document, you think that would help?
If it's in a government school, it's not going to... One of the things I advocate is ending government schools. I think the separation of school and state is as important as the separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's as bad to have a government run in Sunday school as it is to have them run in Monday school through mm-hmm. Friday school.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the as long as you have the government running the schools, if you have them teach the U.S. Constitution, they'll destroy that as well as they can destroy anything else.
Mm-hmm.
If the government had run the churches the way Bellamy wanted the government to take over the schools, it would have been the same horror. That we would have had racist, segregated churches
mm-hmm.
imposed by government, taught by government as official policy. It mm-hmm. would have gone on for decades until in the 1960s, the U.S. Supreme Court decided that they were going to suddenly end the racist, segregated government churches and instead impose forced busing to integrate the government churches.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly what they did with the schools. It's impossible to know how incredibly harmful that was for the United States of America, mm-hmm. thanks to people like the Bellamys and the guy that wrote the Pledge of Allegiance.
Amazing. This is, we've been talking with Rex Curry. He's a Tampa attorney, and he's a libertarian, and he's currently litigating a case involving the Pledge of Allegiance and Second Amendment rights before the U.S. Supreme Court. That's the one in Washington, D.C. And the case is actually Wanschick versus the U.S., Wonschick versus the U.S.
I tell everybody I'm the undefeated media debate champion because I have a standing challenge to bait any of the media mouthpieces around here on their coverage of things like price gouging or their use of the abbreviation for National Socialist German Workers Party or their coverage of the Pledge of Allegiance litigation. So, and I'd like to repeat that right here for Dan Ruth, Robin Blumner, anybody. I'll take you all on.
All right. Well, you won't have to take me on because I think you're in the right, and I'm willing for you to exercise your freedom of speech rights, and I support them. And I just want the public, I want everybody to know about what you've discovered here involving the very grim, dark, horrifying origins of this Pledge of Allegiance and the ramifications of that and the significance on what's going on today. We've had this philosophy, it's very warped, very aberrated philosophy of socialism creep into our government. Men like Bellamy were the PR men for this this philosophy of Marx, which probably a lot of people in his day dismissed him as being just a crank and just an agitator. But people like Bellamy actually kind of buttered the rails there, lubricated the rails to slide this in to a constitutional republic. And at that time, America operated quite well when they held to the Constitution, and which was at that time most of the time. And we've since then the rails that were lubricated actually for socialism really caused a derailment of our republic. And we're seeing with laws like the Patriot Act now, we've certainly gone way off the rails, and we're headed for a train wreck, folks. We have to get these. We have to tell our legislators there in Washington, D.C., that we don't buy this, we're not going to cooperate with it, we're not going to support it, and we want it repealed, we want it gone. And as well as these unconstitutional, ridiculous, so-called gun control laws as well. And actually, we could go down for hours and hours a list of all kinds of laws which are blatantly, flagrantly unconstitutional and that should be repealed. But today, I wanted Rex to let you all know about this situation with this Pledge of Allegiance, which a lot of people are totally unaware of and really don't think much of, but it is important. Rex, you have any concluding statements you want to make here? Because we're almost out of time.
I wanted to thank you for having me on, Tom. This is a continuing education for me. The more I look at the stuff I've already learned, the more it leads me elsewhere. It's fascinating history, and it's like forgotten history. It's a fascinating mystery that no one knows, and I hope I can help other people discover it and learn to enjoy learning the truth about government, government schools, and socialism and the Pledge of Allegiance.
And we're almost out of time, but I just want to let you know that this is the last Wednesday that the Edge is going to be on. Beginning next week, we're moving the slot to Thursday from 11 to 12. Right now it's Wednesday 1 to 2, but we're moving it a little bit earlier. And I trust my guests and listeners will find this a little more advantageous in this sort of midday slot, which is uncomfortable for some. Again, I want to thank Rex Curry. His website, and I'll give that to you one last time here, it's rexcurry.net, and that's spelled rexcurry.net. And that has everything we talked about today on there, plus a lot of other interesting articles that Rex has posted there. A lot of good information, a lot of good links. So thanks for listening. Thanks for being here, Rex.
Thanks, Tom.
We'll see you next week on Thursday at 11 a.m. And thanks for listening to The Edge. I'm producer and host Tom Smith. Bye-bye.